Welcome to the latest episode of Five on the Floor. Thank you for listening wherever you found this podcast or this show. We are definitely going to dive into the Miami Heat's pretty big victory in Utah in the midst of what has been a unpleasant road trip. But before we do, I want to tell you about one of the great sponsors of the Five Reasons Sports Network and of Five on the Floor in particular, and that's Therapist Preferred. So Therapist Preferred is a CBD company that was founded in 2019 by a physical therapist. They maximize performance with recovery for active people with all of these 100% THC-free third-party lab-verified products. All products made in the USA, cutting-edge technology, organically grown hemp. The most popular ones, some of my favorites, the CBD Sports Cream, Strawberry Lemonade Gummies, the Green Apple Gummies. You can find the links all on the website. That's therapistpreferred.com. When you go to that website, use promo code 5RSN. Get it? Five reasons, 5RSN for 25% off your order plus free shipping on all orders. Again, shop now at therapistpreferred.com and follow them on social media. They are on Twitter. Give them a shout out at Therapist Preferred. And now, today's episode.
Five on the floor, ride for my dogs. Where here's the thing, you can check the score. Hustle hard, couple scars, wearing bubble frogs. Just like Buckley said, you in trouble, y'all. Kept the floor playing, got it all banned. Y'all seen the block, stop with one hand. And Pat, we trust, it's power, have the guts. We here to bring the heat, y'all can hang it up.
Welcome to Five on the Floor, a daily insider show on the Miami Heat and the NBA featuring Ethan Skolnick, Greg Sylvander, and Alex Toledo, plus others from the Five Reasons Sports Network.
Welcome back to Five on the Floor. I'm your host, Greg Sylvander, with me to break down the Miami Heat unlikely victory. I'll say the most unlikely victory of the season is Alex Toledo and Brady Hawk. Ethan Skolnick is still doing the West Coast thing and is out of pocket. So we shall keep this moving. So guys, this was something that I don't think any of us expected. Brady and I were on the pregame show. We both were, I think like there was a part of us that that saw a path to this being able to happen, but you don't necessarily want to come out and say that it actually can take place, right? So my initial takeaway was like, boy, did they need this right now. I tweeted it mid-game, like they needed this win so much. I feel like just collectively as a group, mentally, emotionally, there's a lot of things we're going to talk about from an individual perspective about guys that really needed this type of game. Brady, just initial key takeaways. I know you fire them up. They're probably already up on the website. Did you get your five takeaways already up?
Yeah.
See, this is unbelievable. I didn't get a chance to check those out yet because I was preparing for this with my own show sheet. So Brady, tell us what your key takeaways are. Maybe not all five, save some of them, keep them in your bag of tricks, but your biggest takeaways right off the cuff.
Yeah, I think the first one, I know we're going to get into a lot of individual player stuff, so I don't want to go too deeply into that. But I think if I'm going through this starting lineup tonight, Tyler Herro would probably be the last guy I got to on that list. Like I'd hit on Duncan, Bam, PJ, and Kyle before I hit Lowry. And you take a look at the box score and you see 27 points. My initial takeaway is that although he'd be my last guy I went to, I think we're seeing a guy that this is just normal now. Like this is literally what he's going to do on a regular basis. Maybe not score 27 on a regular basis, but he's just going to score in a way that you kind of don't realize that he has that many points. You look at a box score, 1 for 7 from three, and he's still able to get that many points just because of the drop coverage. He was able to get to the rim, get to the mid-range, and it's like showing a complete player that we talk about, a three-level scorer maybe, and he's doing it. So I think that was one of the major things. I think from a team perspective, shooting 39% from three, close to 40%, that's different. Like I think most of these post-game pods we've done, I'd sit here and saying 23, 24% from three every night. Like that's not Miami Heat basketball, even though it may be this season. Last season it was not. That was kind of their specialty. And a big reason for that is Duncan Robinson, which I'm sure we'll get into now in a second. But it just feels like overall three-point shooting, be able to be there when you don't have Jimmy Butler and you don't have that rim pressure and you're able to create good looks and actually hit them, like that's just big time.
Yeah, no, I agree with everything you said wholeheartedly. And to see Duncan get back on track is awesome. And we're going to talk about that because it's been such a hot topic that the fact that he shot as well as he did, we're going to take some time there. But before we get into that part of it, y'all thought I was about to read some ad read. No. I want to talk to Alex about the way that game ended. Like, so the game was great. First half up 10, they extended the lead. I think they got it up to 17 at one point. I don't know how high it got. I mean, weren't they up 25 at one point? Like,
I think Aaron Reed said 30.
They got it to 30.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure I heard him say that at one point in the fourth quarter, that was as high as the lead got at one point. That wasn't where they came back from.
Got it. So should we be concerned? Like, we're not going to spend a lot of time here because no podcast hosted by me is going to focus on the negative when you beat Utah in Utah without Jimmy Butler. So we're spending like 5 seconds here, but because the X's and O's and the way that the basketball games go, and I know that it's a game of runs, but like, did you see anything at the end of that game that concerns you that could carry over, just anything like that? I'm just, before we put to bed the Utah Jazz game and the way that it ended specifically, I'd like you to dive in on that.
I actually didn't see anything that particularly bothered me at the end of the game, if that's what we're going to talk about here specifically. Like, I think it was a lot of complacency, and I know it's kind of a cop-out answer, and it's also a little bit obvious because there's no way you give up that much of a run without a little bit of complacency, right? And I just think it's, you know, you go up so much. I think a part of you, however quantifiable or unquantifiable that is, like a part of you just kind of isn't as hungry or doesn't try with the same exact degree. And I think that's something that a lot of people can relate to, anybody that's, you know, played sports before, whether competitively or not, right? And I just think they got complacent versus a team that is one of the best in the league, especially during the regular season, has been really good, is playing at home with all their guys, and just kind of saw all the Heat's different defenses thrown throughout that game, because we saw zones, we saw traps and stuff like that. I feel like we saw the Heat switching obviously a lot. That was the huge thing for me. And it was, there's some nights where I'm very, you know, concerned about it, and other nights where it looks great. And I think the switching was actually really good tonight. You held like their best scorers and shooters to pretty low percentages for what they're used to, and then you win on a night like that with so much emphasis before that comeback without a big Bam game. Like, he ends up 4 of 11 from a scoring wise, and I think you would expect Bam to have a bigger game for them to, you know, beat up on the Jazz like that in Utah without Jimmy. And obviously Bam played well in other aspects, but I just think like the biggest takeaway for me outside of the crunch time is that the Heat are drop killers, man. And it's not that simple, right? I think we've seen them struggle against switching defenses, but that drop, like, Kyle looks comfy, Tyler looks comfy, and Duncan looks comfy, especially, I mean, definitely against Gobert, but especially against Hassan Whiteside.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Yeah, that's the main stuff I took away from this game.
A couple things I want to touch on there before we go to what Brady already alluded to, because we're going to spend some time on Duncan. But something that jumped off the page for me here is that, you know, I generally have the guts, and I generally don't pick against the Heat, but this game of all games was one where I just did not think they were going to get it. So for them to come out and play the way that they did, I may have opened the podcast that way. I'm reiterating it again. This was huge for them. The timing of this, what had been swirling around this team, there had been skirmishes in multiple games. You can see from some frustration and that kind of stuff, to get this kind of victory is huge. And it was bigger for nobody than it was for Duncan Robinson. What did he finish? 6 of 11 from three. So that's hovering in the mid 54%. I'm doing that off the top of the dome, and I'm not bragging because that's not my skill set. Brady, so we've been on the pregame show over and over again. We're like, here comes the Duncan Robinson game. Here comes the Duncan Robinson game. And I don't even know that we should really pin this as the Duncan Robinson game, but it is a slump buster type of game. Did you see anything different from him, or is this just literally like as simpleton as the shots went in?
Yeah, I think it was just the shots were falling. Like, if he gets one early on, like, it was kind of a discussion last season when he got two early on, like, you were like, oh, this is one of those Duncan games that we see so often. And it was kind of like remembrance of that when you kind of just saw him getting to that early. I just think it's interesting of the way He was doing the same things he's done all season. Like, it was nothing new. But the interesting thing is we've talked about maybe reverting back a little bit to some of the things he used to do. And one of the things he did better than anybody was have a two-man game with Bam Adebayo. It wasn't in the same way tonight. Like, it wasn't just running handoffs. But I will say, you know, we'll touch on Bam, but I think it was probably his, by far his best passing game of the season. And most of that was finding Duncan Robinson. Like, no matter if it was on backdoor cuts, if it was finding him in the corner when they would try to, you know, double away from him, like, they had a type of connection where it felt like Bam was almost saying to himself, like, the only way we're going to win this game without Jimmy Butler is if Duncan Robinson hits threes. And that's what it kind of felt like. And he hit them. And I think something interesting is we talked about him, you know, we kind of expected him to grow into more of a two-point guy, like maybe get to the rim, maybe get to the mid-range and do different things. He can't do that if he's not hitting threes. Like, it's that simple. The way you get to the two, if you're Duncan Robinson, so if you're hitting threes, guys fly out at you, you get by them, get to the rim, you pull up in the mid-range. Tonight, we saw that a little bit. Like, we saw a couple lanes there. Like, that stuff is important. Like, all he has to do is hit some threes, and everything changes for this offense. Like, not only for him getting to the rim, but it changes everything for defensive rotations. So it's just interesting. It's interesting. Just, I think that he needed two games. Like, I don't want to say this one game changes everything. I said two games in a row, and I think he's back. Like, if he gets a rhythm, he gets a confidence that he had two games in a row and he's like, okay, now I'm back. I think that's when it clicks. So if he can come out, you know, we'll look forward probably later in the episode, but if he can come back in a game against OKC and have a big night or a decent night, just at least efficient night, then I think he's officially just back to normal.
So you're more mature than me, because I'm like, Duncan is back. He's shutting everybody up, because I really want him to start shooting well, because to that point, and we're going to pivot here, but I just want to end by saying, when Duncan shoots like that, you can actually survive nights without Jimmy. You could survive a night without Bam. Like, what it opens up and what it allows other guys to be able to do, you just can't quantify it enough. So it was really good to see him get back on track. Let's hope it continues. We got a lot of other guys that we need to talk about, though, because you don't win at Utah after they just lost to Indy at home. This is now two home losses in a row for Utah. That doesn't happen often. You don't do that unless it's a multiplayer effort. So we're going to talk about a few other guys, but before we do, I want to tell you about another great sponsor of Five on the Floor and the Five Reasons Sports Network, and that's CPT of South Florida. They provided small, medium businesses with the technology they need for decades. They specialize in cloud hosting, phone systems, and managed IT. If you own a small or medium business and you're looking to save money on your monthly phone and internet costs, you should give TJ a call right now. He's been helping South Florida businesses save thousands per month, and he can do the same for you. With a cloud phone system, you can work from anywhere on any device. For a free in-person consultation, call TJ at 954-966-2766. That's 954-966-2766. If you call now, there's a promotion that includes 25% off cloud phone service, including free phones and the first 2 months service free. Deal with an owner, not a sales rep. Give TJ, so remember that name, y'all, TJ at CPT of South Florida, call at 954-266-2766 or visit his website at cpt-florida.com. All right, so a couple different places we can go here, but like straight up, Kyle and Tyler kind of undressed Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell, right? Am I being too bullish there? Alex, I guess I'll start with you. Like, first off, Tyler Hero is on another planet with the way he's playing right now. Like, who does he look like? Does he look like Ray Allen? Does he look like Allen Houston? Like, I'm trying to find the comp. Is he Dale Ellis? Like, I can't figure it out, but whatever the hell he's doing, he is unbelievable. I'm calling out names Brady probably doesn't know of. I apologize for that. Not because he doesn't know basketball, but because they're old. So Conley was awful. As my son calls things now, he literal dog water is what he's been saying lately. I don't know where that came from.
That's the thing. That's a thing with little kids, I'm telling you.
Yeah, like he's 10, so that's
it,
like
I think it's a gaming thing.
Yeah, that's where I think he got it from.
I think it's a Knicks nickname.
Interesting. Yeah, he plays Ark a lot. See, now look, I'm veering off in another direction. So anyway, back to this. Talk about like Conley looked awful. But like just the ability for Tyler and Kyle to stem the tide and allow them to sit Jimmy and get this victory, just what it looked like. And just overall your key takeaways with the fact that Tyler is not slowing down?
No, he definitely isn't. I believe that the leap is real. I was, to be honest, believing in the preseason, but obviously now with a few weeks under the belt, it's a lot easier to believe. He's just that guy right now. I'm not saying he's the best player on the team, anything like that. He's just a really damn good player. He's probably still the fourth best guy on the team. That doesn't even matter. He's just, like I said, a really good player, and I don't think it's going to slow down, especially when he's playing with the starters. There's so much talent around him to make his job easier, even though he does play with those guys pretty often in those bench units. I just think it makes his job even easier because he can go against starting units. I don't think he's one of those guys that you put in as a six-man because he can't go up against starters. I think, if anything, the only concern with him would be the defense when it comes to being in starting lineups, but not being able to get to his spots. He can just do it against anybody, clearly. And especially, like I mentioned before, against drop defenses, he knows where those shots are going to be. I know I've mentioned this time and time again on this pod, but like, and the Jazz, will switch some things here and there on the perimeter, but Gobert and Whiteside are always going to be dropping back. And so it's just so much easier for Lowry, Duncan, and Tyler, their main jump shooters, who all get to their shots in different ways, to get to those shots regardless. And I think we saw an aggressive Kyle at times tonight, after we saw it in that fourth quarter almost comeback against the Clippers, that he could turn it on when he wants to, especially against slower bigs. I think he feasts on those guys. And look, man, this is why I feel good about this team in general, because I believe in the steps / leaps, however you want to call it, that Bam and Tyler have taken, right? So I that's overall why I'm so positive about them. They completely outplayed Conley and Mitchell tonight. Like you said, Mitchell shot 8 of 19. Conley shot 2 of 7. Meanwhile, on the other hand, you had Tyler 10 of 23 and Kyle 8 of 14. So not to delve too much into the numbers here, but they also had a better offensive rating in the half court than the Jazz did. And that's something that I'm always going to keep bringing up because I'm interested to see, because we know that they've gotten more transition stuff this year. And that's what's kind of gotten their offensive rating so high, along with the rebounds. But when their half court offense is better than the other team on the road without their best player, that's a great sign. Like, the stuff is real. And so I think that this is, a huge redemption win for the Heat.
And I think the other thing, you touch on like the field goal numbers. The interesting thing is that you can look at Kyle and Tyler's 3-point numbers tonight, 3 for 13, and it didn't matter. Like, they still had amazing, offensive nights, and they don't need the three to fall. And I think that's when you kind of really know that something's for real, that Tyler doesn't have to rely on a 3-point shot anymore. Like, he came in and he gets the JJ Redick comparisons, and he gets the spot up shooter comparisons. Like, that's not him. He can hit it, occasionally. And if he can rely on that, that'll be important for on a team with Jimmy Butler and so many initiators. But he's an on-ball guy now. Like, 3-point shots falling doesn't really make a difference on his night. And you touched a lot on just kind of the way Hero's going at drop. And I think the interesting thing is Kyle really can pick apart a defense in this way, even without Jimmy Butler. Like, when he's the guy, solely the guy that has the ball in his hands and he can kind of pick apart a defense, it really is fun to watch. Like, he can go take Gobert in isolation like he did last time against Utah back in Miami. When he gets to that pull-up in the mid-range, like, that's when he's at his best as a scorer, it feels like, right now. Like, he can get to the rim right now, and it looks good. He can shoot the three, and it looks good, but nothing looks better than when he's kind of just stopping and popping, or he throws in a spin move and spins back for, a nice mid-range jumper. Like, that stuff is just new to see. And I think another thing, looking at the numbers of Lowry and Hero, 9 for 9 from the free throw line. Like, if they can attack without Jimmy and you can get a decent amount of free throws, at least, that's another thing. This team picks up. It's kind of weird. Like, without Jimmy, they kind of pick up on the minor things he does, it feels like. Like, he's impactful because you know what he does on a regular basis with Jimmy Butler. But when he's not there, you notice, like, the things that he does. A couple of those things, like the rim pressure we touched on, Tyler and Kyle provided that tonight. The free throws, like I just mentioned, they provided that tonight. So it just seems like when they can have those type of nights where you can pick up for Jimmy, not just scoring wise or defensively, but in the minor parts, it just feels like that makes the bigger difference in these games.
So I wanted to add one more thing here, by the way, as we, kind of talk through this game, I'm looking at the numbers, and obviously without Jimmy, you're going to miss a lot of free throws, but they lost that battle. They actually had more turnovers than the Jazz as well. And still it was such an emphatic beatdown before that comeback in the fourth quarter. And then regarding like what we're already talking about there with these two backcourts, I think a lot of that, what we saw the Heat hold Donovan Mitchell and Mike Conley to, had to do with the switching that we talked about earlier. Like, they obviously had to see multiple bodies every time. We saw PJ Tucker matched up on Donovan a lot. We obviously see a lot of Bam switching on to these guys as a result of their defense a lot of times. And I just think they never had easy looks. They made it really tough on them. And again, like, this is what you want to see, right? I just think they've got to be really selective with their switches, and they've got to be on point when it comes to rotating the small guys into the paint, which is really risky, right? And I just think, like, as long as those guys get to the spot, send help at the right time, the big man, especially when it's somebody like Gobert who wasn't particularly skilled with the ball, like, that's – it's a really viable defensive scheme, and I think that's why Spo likes it, because there's so much perimeter scoring talent in the league, and I think that's kind of what he's emphasizing, is, like, keep those guys from getting their looks. Let other guys who aren't great shooters shoot threes, and just make sure that nobody's getting easy stuff at the rim. And I think where it compromises is, like I said before, if the smaller guys who are rotating weak side to the rim are not there on time, and then you're just seeing guys feasting like we saw with Zubac against the Clippers. So it's just hard, because it reminds me of last season, where it's like, if that switching isn't on point, it can get ugly. So
yeah,
that's why I'm a little bit, you know, concerned as far as using it game to game. But I loved it for this matchup.
I know. And the funny thing was, like, I woke up this morning and said, like, this isn't from the coaching staff's perspective. I didn't think this was an X and O's type of game. Like, this was more of like, you got to motivate these guys and get them going. And then it turns out that, like, they flip the script and throw these different defenses and layers of defenses. And they kind of, like, I saw a couple times them look like they're going to get into a base defense and then completely switch up mid possession and stuff like that. So it's funny how
the zone was in and out.
Yeah. For real. So it's funny how that creeps up. But to the point of it being more than just about X's and O's, I want to talk about the rebounding, because this was something that — these are pretty evenly matched teams, but without Jimmy, you would think that would become an issue, and they out rebounded them by 10. PJ Tucker. So this is where we want to go. Like, I wish he was signed to more than a 1-year deal, because, like, I want to buy all the PJ Tucker stock of him sticking around in Miami long-term. Like, he is the prototype Miami Heat player. He has been rebounding just unbelievable on this trip. 13, 10, and 11 are his rebounding numbers the last 3 games. Brady, talk about PJ Tucker. He was 3 of 3 from 3, which is huge. Plus 14 on the night. Got you 3 assists. So, I mean, he really had, like, a banner evening. But also the front court in general. You touched on Bam earlier, and I'd like to kind of wrap the two of those together in terms of how they anchored the front court.
Yeah, from my perspective, like, PJ Tucker was the Heat's best player to them. Like, I really believe that, just seeing everything he did, talking about them filling the Jimmy Butler holes, the minor things he does. Initially, the first thing you saw tonight was PJ Tucker crossing half court with the ball in his hands. Like, I don't think I expected that coming into the game, where he's the guy that's kind of initiating offense at times. Like, I don't think that's a role of his. Then he kind of transitioned into the mid to high post, like, Jimmy inside the wing stuff, which was, like, kind of interesting as well. And he was playmaking out of it. And it kind of just leads into him kind of forcing kickouts. And then he can kind of get position to make to the point of the rebounding, like 11 rebounds tonight. We talk about a lot of things PJ does, but, like, he does not — what is he, 6'5"? His ability to box out guys like Gobert is just insane. Like, he just knows how to get positioned so well. And it's like, it feels like there should be more over the back calls when PJ Tucker's playing on the floor against guys like that, because it just seems like he knows how to get positioned better than anybody. And it was just a great night. You mentioned 3 for 3 from 3, which is weird, because I think 2 of those were from the wing or top of the key. Like,
yeah,
it was just an odd PJ Tucker night. Like, this wasn't his usual role. This wasn't his 3-and-D go guard the best player and go sit in the corner. This was kind of a Jimmy-like game where he had to go do so many different things. And it's just interesting to see them have a guy like that, that just — he gets credit, but I don't think people understand the things he does on a nightly basis that you don't realize. Like, I think you take it for granted that if you didn't have PJ Tucker in the lineup, you'd miss a lot of these things, and you probably get out rebounded and you probably get out hustled. And it just seems like there's all these things that every night he probably averages the most times hitting the floor a night. Like, it just — all these things adding up into the equation. And you mentioned starting out the game defensively, he's on Donovan Mitchell, and Donovan Mitchell had an off night. Like, I don't want to sit here and say it was all Miami's defense, because it wasn't, but a lot of that is PJ Tucker. Like, PJ Tucker is everywhere. He knows when to double off a guy, and he can kind of go for that reach that we knew from Iguodala, how he would always kind of never get that foul. He would just perfectly do it. I don't want to say he's on that level yet because that was a pretty elite skill from Iguodala, but it just seems like he knows when to go for that. And just such a ball hawk that he just knows when to go for that. And it's just, I just believe that this was probably his best. The Heat's best player tonight was PJ Tucker.
Yeah. Newsflash, Heat fans. Like, if you get down on a player when they go through a shooting slump, I'm going to prepare you now. No matter what PJ Tucker does from a shooting perspective offensively, that dude's going to play for Eric Spoelstra. And when it comes to playoff time and trusting a guy to not make mistakes, not foul in high leverage situations and make decisions and get rebounds and stuff like that, like PJ Tucker's going to play. So get used to that. I've been really impressed there. Alex, talk about Tyler Hero rebounding above his size. I mean, I think 8 boards is huge in a night like tonight when you need to gang rebound. And then we haven't talked about no ceiling. So what did you see from Bam?
I mean, Bam, like Brady said tonight, this was a game where he looked a lot more like last season as far as being a playmaker. Like, he had his most impressive game there, and I couldn't agree more with everything he said. Like, I still really like watching that two-man game when that side is cleared out between Bam and Duncan. They just really know how to play off each other, and it's not the same degree, but it reminds me of kind of like Jokic Murray, the way that they play off each other, because it's mostly handoff stuff and they just have a lot of chemistry with it. Obviously Murray is a lot more dynamic and do more stuff, and Jokic is more dynamic on offense than Bam for sure, but I'm just saying, like, they have that chemistry together. It's still really cool to watch. The PJ thing, also hard not to, you know, just fall in love with him as a Heat fan, right? Because it's like, he's that exact type of guy that they were missing the past couple of seasons when they tried to go small and switch. And you saw it with Ariza, you saw it with Iguodala, and to some extent Crowder. It's like, those guys, even though they're a little bit taller than Tucker, are not nearly as stocky. It's quite a sizable gap too, right? And those rebounds show up on the stat board sometimes. I mean, the stat sheet sometimes, like they did tonight, and sometimes they don't, but he's always boxing out, and he's always going to be there in the rotation. Sometimes a step slow, right? He's getting up there in age. There's going to be times where he's a step slow on a closeout to a guy like Bogdanovich, for example. But really what he's doing out there is extremely valuable because of what they're trying to do, where Bam is constantly, you know, in and out of the paint, and they're kind of swarming as a switch defense a lot. I just think he fits perfectly there. And especially on a night like tonight, where he hit 3 threes out of 3 attempts and 2 of them were above the break, right? He looks like an incredible fit next to Bam. We're obviously not going to see that, but this is, I think, PJ's best game in the Heat uniform. Like, he's a big man. He's a big man out there. I don't care that he's 6'5 or 6'6. He, for all intents and purposes, functionally on the court, he's a big man.
Oh, for sure. Just based off the strength and the way that, I mean, he boxes out like he is, you know, like on some Charles Barkley kind of stuff. But like, the other thing with him that I think is really cool is, like, I guess I thought he was so incompetent offensively that he was like going to give me shades of the Joel Anthony vibes, like we're literally like they can't catch the ball and just like put it in the basket, like it's
he's
just
being
like,
used as a roller,
and yeah, and like he's got this little floater that he doesn't make all the time, but he makes Brady it sometimes about it,
by the way. He works on those before the games. We both saw it at different games, like him just working on it by himself in pregame, and it's so functional too, because like, instead of always just being planted in the corner, he can screen, use that acreage, use that stockiness of his to leverage the defense. And then on top of that, it's like, well, if they're going to play on Deadman or Bam, whoever's down there in the paint, I'm just going to take this floater.
Exactly. Like, kind of, and then he's in position for offensive rebounds too. I've been 100% impressed with PJ Tucker's offensive game. Not that he's ever going to be a double digit scorer for the team consistently, but I just thought he was way more non-functional than he has turned out to be so far. So
he's more involved in the offense than he was like during the Rockets years, for example, where he was strictly planted at three-point line in the corners all the time.
For sure. And so we're going to get into kind of looking ahead. We're not going to do much of that because Ethan's going to be back with us, and we're going to unpack the Heat looking forward, but we do want to touch on it. Before we do, going to tell you about my favorite sports daily fantasy app out there, and that's Prize Picks. Super easy. Like, people sometimes, I think, when they see the prize pick stuff, it's new to them. They may feel like it could be something that is intimidating, right? It's so easy. You log on to the app, you pick your favorite stars, select anything, anywhere between 2 and 5 players, regardless of sport. You can mix and match. You choose their over and under. They give you the stats, stat projections. You choose over, under, and then you just watch your players win. If you pick correctly, the more money you win, you stack them together. This is a highly acclaimed app. Download the app wherever you get your apps, whether it's the Google Play Store or the Apple, the App Store. You can find it there. You can do power plays. You can do flex plays. There's just so much fun stuff on that app. And when you sign up and deposit, use promo code FIVE, FIVE. That will instantly double your deposit up to $100. Again, that's prizepicks.com or download the app PrizePicks. Use promo code FIVE to get your deposit doubled up to $100 right off the bat. You can play with that money ASAP right when you get it. Anyway, so let's put a button on this. We've talked about the Utah Jazz game. We're moving on. They've got one more on the road in Oklahoma City, which sounds like it should be easy. And just because we know how this goes, it's probably not going to be. And then they are at home against New Orleans. And then they've got a home and home with Washington. And that'll kind of get them through the weekend. I'll start with you, Alex, and then Brady, you can put a bow on this one. What are you looking for as they go to Oklahoma City specifically? And then, you know, they're kind of, I felt like this Utah game could kind of salvage the road trip, as crazy as that sounds, because of how undermanned they were. Like, what are you looking for as we look ahead to the next week?
Well, look, just take care of business. I know it's cliche and it's said a lot when it comes to teams that are considered bad, like the Oklahoma City Thunder, but you got to win that game. And I agree with you, as long as they win that game. Like the Jazz game was a huge win. I think helps make you feel better about the way that they lost those two LA games. And then if they take care of business with OKC, I would feel a lot better about it, just because that's a team that you have no excuse losing against. I don't care if you don't have Jimmy. I understand, like, they haven't been playing like the worst team in the league, like some people thought maybe they would. Like, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is kind of an all-star level player almost, pretty much. And then they've got some good young guys with Josh Giddey, obviously Lu Dort.
You know,
they're not a good team, but they're not the 1-11 Pelicans or whatever the Pelicans are now, maybe 1-12 after they lost to Brooklyn last night. So don't let them sneak up on you. Don't let it be a trap game, Eric. Shout out to Tony Fiorentino. The Thunder are 5-6, man. Like, this is the type of game that teams, like Heat teams in the past, have lost. So don't do it. The one thing that they're not terrible at is defense. They're right there in the middle of the pack. So that's all I can say analysis-wise. Don't let Shai kill you. Just take care of business, man. And, you know, get out of here. Finish the road trip without another disaster.
Brady, so forever there's been this there's been this philosophy that the last game of a long West Coast trip before you're going to get home is always dangerous, because everybody's like, yo, we are so close to getting back to the crib, so close to sleeping in my own bed, so close to going to the restaurants I love and being with my family or doing whatever I'm doing. Do you believe that there's any validity in them just wanting to get back to Miami as soon as possible based off this road trip being as cumbersome as it's been, one, and is OKC a trap game? I mean, I know that they do have that young talent. They're limited in certain ways, but do you think that that's a trap game heading back home?
Yeah. For the first point, I don't think you're thinking about getting home in that way when you're 1-3 on the trip. Like, I feel like that's the thing when you're 3-1, you're like, that's the trap game. I feel like you're not prepared for it. You're trying to get back home maybe. And that just feels the way it usually goes. In this scenario, I think they need to get this one. Like, this, I don't want to say that too many times before every single game, but it just feels like on this road trip. The reason I think this game tonight was so important for moving forward is not just for the win. I think it's for Jimmy, because if they lost this game, Jimmy would probably be, I don't know what his status is going to be in OKC.
He'd press, he would
have been,
right?
He would have been rushing back. Like, I feel like he would have been pushing it back, and maybe he's not ready to return. We don't know. Maybe he will play. But it just felt like you do not want to be put in that situation where you're 0-4 on the road trip and you have Jimmy Butler, your best player, rushing back for a game against Oklahoma City, who Alex just mentioned is 5-6. So I feel like that's the important part. So we'll kind of see what happens. I think it could be a trap game, but if Jimmy Butler plays, like, the questionable tags recently kind of make it interesting because of like what it's going to be. But even if without him, this win, I think it's going to cause a lot of momentum more than anything. And I think it'll be interesting. The one other point I want to make about this game as we tie this up is kind of just off topic a little bit, but it's kind of something we see a lot with this depth. Like, it's something we see when Tyler Herro moves to the starting lineup and we hear the Gabe Vincent talk that they need a backup point guard. And he didn't have the greatest offensive night. Like, he had some great defensive moments, which need to be mentioned. But I think the interesting thing is, I don't know if backup point guard is the thing we're going to be discussing moving forward as much as front court depth. Looking at tonight, you saw Miami switch from Duncan to Max Strus to Caleb Martin at the four. Like, this isn't front court depth. This is them using their back court depth to
it's fill the sustainable, front court. Right, Brady?
Right. So, like, it feels like they have a little bit of backcourt depth that they're using because they have a little bit of size to fill that front court depth. You have Casey Okpala, they're not willing to play in these games. You have Omer Yurtseven, who they throw in for 3 minutes, but they seem like they're not trusting at this moment. Udonis Haslem got out there, but it doesn't seem like he's going to be playing extended minutes. It just feels like we're talking so much about the additions of a backup point guard when it feels like it should be the other way. It feels like they need to kind of find something there in the front court so then you can have your guards actually be guards. So I think that's just an interesting thing. Obviously, it's just kind of on blast because you're without Jimmy Butler and you're without Markieff Morris. So maybe when you're healthy, it isn't as loud because you're missing two front court pieces, but it just seems that way right now. But it does seem heading back to OKC, this would be a big one to get.
Yeah, for sure. So a couple things. Somebody asked me on Twitter if I thought that it would be a viable idea for them to try to package, like, let's see, KZ Akpala and another guy to free Gabe Vincent, for instance, to free up a couple roster spots to make the ability to get buyout candidates. And we're talking way down the line here, so I'm not going to spend too much time here. I think that's absolutely on the table, and I think it's something that they'll explore. I would not even be surprised if they would attach small assets of some kind, second round picks, if they've got any of them. I got to go check if they've got one in the next 10 years, but because you're right. Like, yeah, John Wall would be awesome. If Goran gets traded somewhere and bought out, great. Like, bring them all back. But the nuts and bolts tell me that those, like, the Lowry's and the Jimmy's and the Bams and the Tyler's, especially now that Tyler plays the way that he does, they're going to be controlling the ball anyway. So, like, I agree with you. I think that there can be some wing conversations to be had and also front court. So more to come there. Thank you for joining us as we broke down this Utah Jazz Miami Heat game. We will be back next week on a regular schedule. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for listening to the Five on the Floor on the Five Regional Sports Network.